Welcome back to episode 264 of For the Love of Cinema. This is 264B, where we will now talk about where we will now talk about Munich, The Edge of War. With you for that discussion will be Grayson, Roger, and Chris. For the episode, talking about Home Team, including the box office breakdown, what streaming, trailer talk, check out episode 264A, which posted on 2/8. All right, gentlemen, we are back. Let's talk about another movie, another Netflix original, Munich, The Edge of War. Tomato meter, 86%. Audience score, 78%. Both numbers much higher than Home Team. Much higher.
It is shocking development.
Shocking development. Yes, yes. All right. Let's. Directed by Christian Schwachow. If I said that wrong, I'm sorry. We have.
You did.
The wonderful Jeremy.
I just assume he always does.
The wonderful Jeremy Irons. George McKay, if you remember from 1917 fame. Boy, he was great in that movie. That movie was great and he was great in
yeah.
it. That's for sure. Jessica Brown Finley. Liv Lisa Fries. And Janice Noliner.
Giannis.
Oh, yeah, it would be Giannis and Jeremy wouldn't be. All right. Roger, tell us what Munich, The Edge of War, is about.
Giannis. So Munich, Edge of War, is it's a political movie, political thriller drama about what happens in Munich in late 1937, early 1938, right before everything begins to break down. With Nazi Germany and Britain, and during their proposed invasion of Czechoslovakia. So that's the short version of it.
It is. And it's, again, we don't, with movies like this on Netflix, we don't watch as many trailers. As a matter of fact, we might see one because we talk about it on the show, but generally we don't see more than one and we don't watch it more than once, which is a change from seeing movies theatrically, which we see the trailers and we see the plot of the movie hammered over and over again. And then eventually you're desensitized by it. The advantage to going into these movies is you don't really know much about it. You might from the title be able to glean what it may be about. But to be honest, I didn't even know Jeremy Irons was in this movie. And I was very pleasantly surprised when he was, because he is always a treasure. He is
he's
a damn
good
treasure.
In just about everything.
He's the best part of this. He's the best part of a good movie. And that's got to say something, because like he's amazing. And it's just, there's not a lot of action in this movie. But what there is, a lot of sneaking around, a lot of espionage, very intense conversations that, I mean, have you reeling on the edge of your seat the whole time, even though you know what happens in history, because history played out a certain way. We know what happens in 1938. We know what happened in 1939 when the Wehrmacht invade Poland, start a war. We know what happens in the timeline. So with all this information you're getting is a small piece of the puzzle. And I know there's some fiction here, and I don't quite mind. I mean, this isn't like Inglourious Basterds fiction where they end up killing Hitler in a movie theater. I mean, that's a complete perversion of history, but this is, I think some of the facts are twisted a little bit. It is adapted from a novel by Robert Harris.
By me, I read it.
About the events in 1938 Munich. Some of it is fiction, but overall I think the story probably has some truth to it. There is a document that is leaked about, so Hitler has, at this stage in history, he has told people, the world theater, that as long as Germany gets the Sudetenland back, they will make no further territorial demands. And of course, our main character, George K., Hugh Leggett, comes into contact again with his old college buddy, Paul von Hartmann, who has a document of the minutes of a secret meeting with Hitler and his high command, that he has indeed plans to destroy all of Europe, turning it all into German living land. And so they're trying to get the document to the people who can do something about this. I found it completely riveting. I'm just reciting the movie. But Chris and Roger, tell me what you guys thought about this. We all know I liked it.
I thought this movie was great. I thought it was intense, intelligent, very, very good acting. Because there's a lot of scenes where there's only one or two people going on at one time, and it's very engaging. Very dramatic, and I'm here for it, man. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah.
I like this movie very much. And Roger already said a lot of good things about it. This movie is dialogue. This movie is driven by dialogue. There isn't any action in this movie besides maybe you can say one small scene.
There's like a fight scene.
There's like a weird fight scene, right? But so this movie is 99% driven by the dialogue and the characters that you see on screen. And this movie does it. I'm on for the whole ride. I feel like I have stakes in what's happening on screen. Even knowing the history of what happens, you know, state it again, you still are on the edge of your seat at certain scenes because, you know, because you're rooting for the people you're following so much the whole time, and you're just not ready for things to go badly for them.
Well, this movie is good. Well, I wanted to ask you guys this, and of course, I think so much of the movie hinges on the fact that you are getting the scary vibes of, you know, especially Von Hartmann, who starts out as a very, you know, passionate card-carrying member of the Nationalist Party in Germany in the early 30s, but he ends up being someone who's trying to prevent and bring down a war, even if he has to kill Hitler himself. To me, the answer to my question is yes. I'm going to say, did you guys get the vibes that? I mean, did you get that? I mean, did you really get the vibe out of the movie that his life was in peril? I mean, had this gone wrong, he was dead. Like,
yes,
I mean, yeah, and the Nazis are gonna find him anyway. But I mean, he is risking literally everything and more than that, but people he knows by doing this. That came across to me, and that's one of the things. Like, that's how you know this movie is successful with the dialogue, is because I really got that peril was the number one thing here. I had my teeth on edge in certain scenes.
I think one thing that I appreciate about this movie, that most movies that are politically based around World War II, at least in that time frame, don't really ever touch on too much, is we spend a fair amount of time in this movie in the early 1932 range.
Yeah.
Like right when Hitler is coming to power, about how it was like an intoxicating radical leader thing changing the German landscape. You know, after like post World War One, you know, coming through to make America. Freudian slip there. About how he was going to bring Germany, like the proud German heritage back, and about how all like a lot of young folks really bought into this, and how they became what, you know, further down the road became Nazi Germany, and so much so that we see like longtime friends, best friends, have a very bad
falling out,
like breakup over it. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to see how that all came into play. Mm-hmm. So about how the ideology really did affect everything. So, and about, especially with Paul's whole turnaround about why he wasn't that way anymore, which is sad, but absolutely something that, you know, listen, I know this story is at least based in fiction. Is a very believable story.
Oh yeah,
not based in nonfiction.
Yeah. Sorry.
It is. I mean, it's we all know like the sweeping moments of World War II, but like there's so many, like thousands of little events that no one knows anything about because it's just lost to history now. But I mean, I think this is one of those things where like I think there probably wasn't an event that in that time period that probably happened somewhat like this.
Oh yeah. Well, I think something this movie does really well, and we don't harp too much on this usually, but I felt it in this, is the movie's score does a really good job of building tension, even in like the small discussion scenes.
Oh, yeah.
They use sound really well in this movie, where there's a scene where our German characters are meeting in a crowded bar where they're singing and laughing and stuff going on. They're like tucked in a corner.
Looks like an awesome place to hang out, by the way.
Well, yeah.
I would drink beer there for sure.
Well, and like they begin talking and they're not really in hushed tones, but the bar sounds start to go away and they're getting quieter and quieter as they're talking. And I think that really brings like kind of some impact into how big this is for them. Cause if there's people that could turn them in and they'll be killed on the spot for what they're discussing, and they all know that.
Well, I mean, they just be disappeared one night, and no one would ever see them again.
Well, yeah, or even so,
100%.
But it's just like the movie has multiple points where it uses, you know, the sound and the score to drive home with some of these like these tension filled scenes. Where, again, they're just dialogue, and it does a really good job of it. I'm applause for it. It's very good.
Well, one of the advantages of one of the advantages when talking about World War II is the first war was the Great War, which is referred to several times, of a hard fought peace, and the peace should be defended at all costs. Neville Chamberlain says, and he's absolutely right, is there was no evil in the First World War. There was just two sides with different ideologies going at it. In the World War II, there's actual evil. I mean, Adolf Hitler is definitely one of the most evil dudes ever lived on this planet. There's no sure. doubt about that. Sure.
Can I build off of that for a second?
Yes, but I'm going to come right back to what I'm saying. But go ahead.
How many movies have you seen where? Well, actually, I'll phrase it this way. With this movie, I've heard already like said and talked about where they say the way that they did Hitler, they portrayed Hitler was different. You know what I mean? Which is true, but what if this is a more accurate telling of that character? Because all the things we see, he's always this overplayed, very loud, very, you know, almost comical character mm-hmm. with the way he does his speeches and all that kind of thing. Where the Hitler we get in this movie is super brooding and menacing.
Menacing and very reserved.
Yes. Which, you know, I feel like that it was such a interesting way to do him. He seemed like a real evil son of a bitch in this. Dude. Yeah.
Whereas, that was my next question was like,
yeah,
I and the guy who played him, his name is Ulrich Mathis, and mm-hmm. he does a pretty outstanding job. And, you know, I think of at least how I remember, I mean, how I would, you know, ask some actor to play Hitler, that's pretty close. And what you just said is probably, you know, the brooding, methodical, evil son of a bitch that, like, that's the character. And I mean, we've seen the overplay, like Jojo Rabbit, and for instance, what was the Tarantino movie? Inglourious Bastards. He's very loud. And I mean, that's one way to play him, you know, almost comical. But then there was, you know, the Hitler in Valkyrie with Tom Cruise was also that this same kind of Hitler was very reserved, very quiet, very methodical, brooding, always watching you. You know, that kind of Hitler, I think, is probably the Hitler that the history books, you know, sometimes don't always want to talk about, but that's how they remember it.
I feel like he was just perfectly menacing in this. And
I think you're right.
It adds weight to the scenes that he's in because if you get the other version of Hitler, it'll probably take away from that tension where you could have this crazy bastard that go off the handle any second kind of feel, but not the evil feel that we got out of him because he does feel evil every time he's on screen.
So there is one interaction towards the very, very end of this movie with Paul and Hitler, mm-hmm. okay, where Hitler is asking Paul's actual opinion mm-hmm. as a young, educated German about why people portray him the way that they portray him. And I had the feeling in that scene, how it plays out, that he's very interested in what Paul actually has to say, because I think he had like this weird respect to him that Paul wasn't going to give him a line of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, he would ask him the question, he would give him an absolutely laser straightforward answer, and Hitler would think about it instead of just reacting to
Well, here's the thing behind that is, the von Hartmann character is, I mean, he is probably the most changed this entire movie. Where we find him in the beginning is a card-carrying nationalist. And by the end, he's literally almost like in the scene you're talking
basically liberation.
Yeah. He has a gun behind the satchel of letters he's carrying. And he's going, like, an option is to kill Hitler in that room right then and there. And I mean, just think about. And I think the movie does a good job in helping you get in the psychology of his head at the moment is kind of what I love about the movie is a very psychological, you know, very ethereal movie. It really gets you in the heads of the characters.
Yes.
Can you imagine the weight going through that dude's mind when he's standing face to face with one of the most evil men on the planet who he knows is about to start a war and commit more atrocities to the Jewish people? Just imagine how many movies we watch where a character has that kind of weight behind it. There's not many. Not many at all.
No. Well, and they do a good job of showing you and making you believe that this character really has nothing left to lose anymore.
Nope.
And even with that information that this character has, he still can't do it in the end. And I think it just goes to show the weight that his opposite, that Hitler holds, is even knowing everything he does, knowing that he really has nothing left to lose, he still can't do what would be best for what he knows and believes would be best for humanity.
Absolutely.
It's just a heavy scene.
Well, so done really well. Even with the casting of Jeremy Irons as Chamberlain, which is a great choice. But Jeremy Irons kills it as Neville Chamberlain. Even George MacKay, who, again, is fantastic. Like, there's nothing I can take away from any of these people who are playing these roles, is most of the scenes that whoever plays – I said his name. I've forgotten it already. Giannis, he plays Paul Hartman. Giannis Nawaner is – I mean, that scene where he's telling Neville Chamberlain that the proof in your hand is he's going to start a war is like – to me, like, that was the end – like, with those three guys in the room, holy crap. The amount of star power in that room, and he steals the show.
Well, I thought that scene was so well done, and I think that the role of Chamberlain, he reacts perfectly. Like, and you knew it was going to be a reaction like that, but like, it wasn't driven in your, like, just piled in your face about you know, him just being kind of like aloof to the situation. It feels like he's dismissing it, but at the same time, you kind of feel that he knows there's weight to what he's doing right there, and he's making the only decision that he can.
There are wheels turning in his brain, and he's trying not to push it. Like, he's not trying to do the bullet train forward.
Yeah.
He's trying just what he knows he can do, little bits and pieces to angle that away from that.
So. Well, and he talks about playing the game with the cards he's dealt when he's talking to a character.
Yes.
But I believe he's actually, the whole time he's having that conversation, he's talking to one of our characters, actually, by not speaking to him at all, but he's in the same room.
Yes.
And he directs a question to him at the very end to kind of drive that point home. I think that scene there is a small little kind of side scene, but I think that was written really, really well.
Yeah.
Because I love that exchange that was between two characters, but wasn't for the character that it was being directed at. That was really cool.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Mm-hmm. Please.
Is there anything that you guys did not like about this movie?
Well, so me and you talked a little bit about it. I think my only real problem with this is that it's just a smidge too long. I think its runtime is just a hair too long in this.
Okay.
I think you could tighten this up a little bit and the pacing would feel perfect. Other than that, I don't have any problems with this that I can really think of that are glaring anyway.
Sure. What about you, Grayson?
No, actually, I was on quite literally the edge of my seat watching it. Like, again, I know the history behind it. I know a lot more than most people about, you know, how the events of World War II line up, especially the early events. And to me, I was still like intrigued, like what's going to happen in this scene? Because I mean, what I don't know is these conversations that happened before, you know, all these several conferences that was happening, you know, all that. But I was, there's several things I loved and very few things I didn't. I think one of the things I thought was overdone was the George MacKay character, especially in the end when he's, you know, he's come home to his wife and he's like, I'm going to join the RAF. There's a war coming. And I just thought it was too much. I thought, like, as far as if you isolate what we're talking about, which is this movie, the characters in this movie, I thought the wife deserved more than what she got with the end with her husband, who didn't really return. He returned a changed man, but not like completely changed. You know, he's burdened with the knowledge of what's going to happen.
So one of the things that I had, I don't think it's a negative thing. One of the things that I kept playing out in my mind that doesn't add up just because I know the history is the argument that Hugh Leggett is having with his wife before he leaves for Munich. And she's like, can't somebody else go? And I'm like, bitch, this is important. You don't even know. But I mean, that's unfair.
Yeah. Well, so, and on your point, Grace, and it plays off of what Roger just said too. I think he's just protecting his wife. The less she knows, the better kind of feel.
But also, I know we're in 1938. I mean, in some of the movie 1932. I know we're, but I mean, still the roles that men and women play, especially in, you know, English society and German society, are very different than they were in American society. I mean, the woman was the homemaker, and that was it. You know, yep. I mean, so. I can understand why someone might have a problem with some of those scenes, especially today in 2022. But I mean, that's how it was. But I either wanted the wife to play a bigger role or no role at all. I would have preferred there been no discord. Like, okay, let me ask you this. The character of George MacKay, Leggett. That's what we call him, Leggett. Does his character change at all if he's having problems with his wife or not?
Does anything change? Because, you know, he's already on edge. You know, there is one character who does not handle stress well in this movie. It is Hugh Leggett, George McKay's character, because he's stressed from the beginning of this movie to damn near harried by the end of it. You know, he's so on edge because, you know, he's having trouble at home. He's got a deal. He's got a big, important job. And he does have a very important job. Like, legitimately, what he does is very important in British government. And he's got all that stuff going on at home. He's legitimately trying to keep Britain, like, steer them out of direct conflict with Germany. And then on the side note, gets roped into espionage, like, smack in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And he is not built for any of it. Like, he's barely hanging on as, like, the government aide, let alone spy man.
Well, so I think the problem with his wife is written in, and we're shown it for the purpose of showing how well Paul knows him and how close they once were. Because when they meet up, they talk about him being married and how he's probably having marital problems at home, that he won't let his wife in, and she complains about that. And I think that, and he guesses, he hits it all on the nose.
Oh yeah, he knows.
And I think it's there to show you how well these two still know each other, how close they would be without their falling out. I think that's what it's for, because they go to great lengths to protect each other. You know, even as they disagree all the way up through a lot of points in this movie.
Sure.
I think that's what the whole purpose of the wife's role is in this movie towards his character.
Sure. And that makes sense. I mean, that you're not wrong about any of what you just said. That makes 100% sense. And that's in a movie that could have afforded to maybe be 10 minutes
shorter. Yeah.
Less 10 minutes less running time. Maybe that would have been part of the cutting room. Although,
yeah,
the whole family, because I mean, if you see, there was like, there were several moments where they cut away to George's, or sorry, I keep calling him George, Hugh's Leggett's ring over. I mean, the fact that he's a married man is a big, I mean, it's part of the character. Yeah. So, I mean, I understand the need to want to bring the wife in. But there are also several moments. I mean, the real great part of these movies are Paulie and Hugh, you know, because they're both in an extremely perilous situation that, you know, I mean, they're both sure that the next day they're going to be shot. Every day is their last. I mean, they're both very sure that they're done, especially when Leggett hands him the thing written at the end that says, they have the document. I'm so sorry.
Well, yeah. Well, on that note, this movie does such a good job of building tension in scenes that don't have anything going on in it.
You well, know, especially right? like, with the, especially with the, I don't know if to call him a Nazi or the guy in the German army who's like part of Hitler's, you know, protection unit.
Can we talk about Mr. August Diehl for just a minute?
We need to.
Because, I think. Listen, this dude forever will be a German soldier in every movie.
I think he's a very menacing character in this movie. I think they do a good job of just making it like he's unsettling on screen because you know how committed he is to the German cause. Every time he's on screen, like, oh God.
Franz Sauer is his name.
Yeah.
He's part of Hitler's personal guard, one of 27, who actually knows Paul Van Hartman from their old primary school days, basically. And they have some very intense interactions. And
the train scene is so good, too, because there's that tension that's there that I'm talking about where he puts something behind a mirror. Mm-hmm. And when he goes back to that point and for a second he doesn't pull it out, I was like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. Like, it had me. Yeah. But everything's cool. But then he goes back to the room.
And he's searching his bags.
And he's so like, ah, you caught me. Ah,
I'm part of my job.
I'm going to do this no matter what, and you can't stop me. Like, dude, that's fucked.
Yeah. Very intense, man.
He's just an evil dude. And it's... And you can tell it's because that's just who he is. He believes in the German cause and all of that. That's just it's terrifying stuff when you think about it.
Yep. He's excellent.
Oh, God, he is.
I keep saying it. There's nobody bad in this movie.
No.
So I don't want anybody to think that, oh, this guy's good. If I don't talk about him, they must be bad. There's not bad at all.
Nope.
So
there's so much. I feel like this is a rare problem we have, which is sad. But there's so much credit to be given in this movie that it's hard to hit it all.
I love that last part of that. It's sad because I mean you'd think there'd be more movies would be like this.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
There's just so much excellent going around that I mean. There's. You're right. That guy is so good at the role he's playing.
Oh God, yeah.
Especially like. I mean, you just see there's like the whole we don't have to wait like the filmmakers don't really waste much time with, you know, like with all the walking around that Hugh and Pauly do. It's like looking over their shoulder and like if they're being followed because I mean, this guy does a good enough job that like he's watching them. He's watching. Oh, he's certainly watching Pauly and he's watching the British delegation. Of course he's watching.
Oh, yeah. So, once he sees them together, he's all in. That's it.
Yeah. He knows. In the one fight scene we get, he screams, you know, what are you doing here in Munich? You know, and like it's like, goddamn. That dude's pissed.
Well, two of my favorite scenes in this movie are after Pauly has had his 3 minutes with Neville Chamberlain and didn't quite get the message across he wanted to.
I think he got his message across.
One of my favorite things is when, you know, he's talking to Neville and Neville's like, what do you mean? I can't just leave this. If I leave, that's disastrous for Europe. And then he's getting more and more passionate. And like before going in the room, Leggett says, don't get heated. Just tell him the facts. Don't get emotional. And he calms himself down and he stands up and says, please don't sign that treaty.
Yeah, he gets
and
then all just mad walks out of the room. He's like, please, thank you for your time. Yep. Please don't sign that treaty. Turns and just beelines right out of the door.
But he knows.
God damn, that was a good scene.
It was.
But Giannis, man, shout out to him as a talented young actor. Boy, he stole that scene from two other very capable, very good actors.
Yes.
You know, like, I mean, he definitely walked out of that with the MVP award from that scene. It's incredible. That's the whole thing. It's like, and then. Because they're all – he's waiting for the axe to fall the entire time. He thinks that the soldier who's protecting Hitler, he thinks he knows. Every time he's like, "This is it. Are you here for me?" And then I love the line when he says
– Yeah.
Not yet, Pauly, but soon. And like, oh, yeah. Man.
Well, because when he says that to him, he thinks that he has the doc. So he says that ready to go and – he doesn't know that he's saying not yet but soon because, you know, just he knows something's up, but he's not sure what yet.
That's the beauty of how that plays out is like not even we know who has the document.
We did not at that time. That is
but
correct.
I mean, we assumed.
Found out just then.
Okay, right.
We found out right before that line said, but it doesn't take away how that impacts Paul. Because think about it. If our other guy doesn't get the message to him that, hey, guess what? They actually didn't have it. He thinks the whole time, the rest of his life, that they're just going to kill him anytime now. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, that's terrifying.
His ass down.
Yeah, right?
Well, see, what I mean is we assume that it's the Nazi soldier, the German soldier who was ransacking Hugh's room that now has a dog. We have to assume that, right? There's no other
Franz reason. Sauer. Yep.
Franz. We have to assume that Franz has that document. So, like, we're on pins and needles.
They did a great job of making us think he did.
Oh, I mean that's the whole point.
This movie does a great job of everything.
It does. This movie's pretty damn good.
And the other scene I loved is the night after they failed, after whatever plan they had did not work out quite the way they wanted it to. The meeting with Neville didn't go well. The document's gone. When they're in the car and they're talking about what's going to happen to the world. And now, and then after they like just what's happened has happened, what's done is done. We cannot do anything more.
Mm-hmm.
When they say, when Hugh starts crying and says goodbye, like I almost want him to say goodbye, bro. Like, brother, it's two great friends that that haven't seen each other in six years.
Mm-hmm. That
are sure that the jig is up, that they have been made and they're going to be executed.
Well, his line was
to each other.
His line was perfect and perfectly delivered. All he says in response is, "I'd miss you."
Yep.
You know, and that's coming from a guy who you hadn't seen in 6 years. You know, that's how impactful that would be.
And last time they talked to each other, basically told each other to fuck off.
Yeah.
So like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And we talked last week about the talking and the power of the dog. But this is the power of great written dialogue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, that's what I love about this movie is like, it's, it's there. There are no, you know, fights. I mean, there's no car chases. There's no like massive gun battles or space battle. But you're still on pins and needles almost the entire time.
The most action in this movie is that there's an almost gunshot.
But man, yeah, that's true. That scene cannot be understated. Like, there's no way you can understate that scene. Like, that scene is masterfully crafted.
It's just heavy. That whole scene is heavy.
Yeah, I mean, I am glad that we got to see Hitler, and they chose to. I am glad we got to see the character of Hitler rather than never showing him.
And he's just not faceless.
Yeah, yeah, that happens in some of these kinds of movies too, right? Where like you don't even get the, you just see his back, you know, in a few scenes and stuff. Yeah,
because I wonder how. I wonder if that dude, because he did such a good job playing Adolf Hitler, I wonder if, because you know, like the people that played Malfoy and his father, when they're walking around the street in London, they got shit. They're like, leave Harry alone. People yelling at him. Like,
yep.
I'm an actor. I'm playing a character. Thank you. But I wonder if this guy is going to get some of that same.
Doubtful.
No, because fans of Harry Potter are fanatical fans. Where this is a history piece. You know. With drama. I think that's why it doesn't go that way for him, you know, compared to like the Harry Potter stuff.
Sure. That's fair. He did such a good job. I know what you're saying, though. Such a fantastic job at playing Hitler. 100%. It was just, I was worried for my life, you know, watching some of these scenes play out.
You were nearly killed watching this film.
There's nothing that you guys didn't like.
No, I don't think so.
Like I said, you know, besides, you know, runtime and a tad bit of pacing, like this movie is just maybe the fact that not Paul, but God, what's his name, Hugh, like how big his eyes get when he's scared when he's supposed to be keeping it cool.
Oh, you man. Know?
He's not he ain't built for the spy work.
That dude's a wreck.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, hold on. I have one serious story thing that bothered me a little bit, but I forgave it because how good everything else is the MI6 stuff, mm-hmm. and how he's kind of tasked with getting this document. How, like, they kind of just like, hey,
sent James Bond in.
Well, it's not even that. It's, hey, we need you to get this. This is really important. And then like they don't like, you know, hey, as soon as you get this, you know, get a copy of it to us, or hey, you know, debrief us on what this is immediately or anything. It's just like, this is your reason to go get this document, and they never bring back to it. They don't, or hey, give this to Neville, or hey, do this. Like, he can't say to Neville Chamberlain at one point where he go, hey, so MI6 told me to get this, and you know, it's really important. You should read this. It's, you should really read this, sir. No. Okay. And then walks away. You know what I mean?
Like, no one told the prime minister what he was doing.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, like that's my only like the word, like there's a small story beat that probably could have been written a little bit different. Other than that, this movie's fucking flawless.
I don't think, you know, it's flawless. What, one I, part I, mean, I did laugh about this internally to myself, when they're talking about Neville Chamberlain, like he wants to go like relax, catch up on a nap. He's like, he's been awake for 15 hours, and I went, whoa, 15 whole hours.
I mean, for a guy that old back in England, that's probably a long time.
Dude, yeah, that was just hilarious. He's been awake for 15 hours.
I'm going to go catch 40 winks. That dude needs to sleep for 2 days after a 15-hour
You know, it's something I caught that was – I don't know how old Chamberlain was. That's one thing I don't know is off the top of my head. But he said – when he's talking to Hugh about the Great War, he said, you were too young and yeah, I was too old. And that was 20 like 30, years difference.
20 years, yeah.
So I wonder how old Neville Chamberlain was in 38. That means he must have been born in like 18-something. I mean, 18, like,
well, I'm 60, sure he was.
1870 or 60 or something.
You know, people didn't live very long back then, right?
Of course not. But, I mean, it's, you know, we're approaching modern. I mean, I feel like then
was
we're
he in born modernity, during our Civil War?
No, because that was way too. Anyway.
He was 71 years old when he died.
What year was he born?
1869.
Just missed it.
1869. Good year to be born, baby.
Oh gosh! Yeah, you went there with that. Jesus.
This movie does a lot of great things, but it's one of those, I think, very deceptively good movies. I don't think this movie's a 10. I don't think it's a 9. I don't think it's an 8. But I want to give it a 10, but I'm learning to temper my own expectations and like, okay, wow. I need to sit down with this movie and really kind of like dig into it, but.
We're ready to score then? Is that what we're doing?
Two more minutes, but
okay.
Did you like, let me ask you, did you like the set design, and did it feel like it was shot on location and not in sets. Like, not
did everybody look like grown up Harry Potter? Yes. Their big rounded glasses.
Did you feel like it was shot like in? I mean, did you feel like it was shot in 1938 in Munich? Because that's the question.
Yeah, I mean, it felt real. Yeah, you know, like when he's walking through the streets of Germany and the big Nazi banners are flying. Because I mean, there are plenty of pictures like that out in the world where it's just decorated all down the streets, and
that was the new German flag for a while.
That was it.
I mean, Germany was huge on like presentation.
Oh yeah,
I mean they even held the Olympics like 2 years before that. Like they
38.
They was it 38? Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's when Jesse Owens walked into their house and beat the shit out of them. That's right, baby. America, goddamn it.
Destroyed his run. Yeah, yeah.
Or was that 36? I have to verify.
You don't know, but this is a taste of what's to come.
I think it was 36 because they were given. I don't know if this is true or false at this point, but I remember hearing somewhere that he was given. At least he was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for turning Germany's fortunes around. But I don't know if that's true. I mean, I could just be remembering false history.
36.
I thought it was 36. Yeah, I said 36. The set design, I think, with that time period is very important. That's why you can't green screen it.
You mean they didn't leave any coffee cups on the
very Starbucks coffee cups in a medieval
Starbucks fantasy. In Munich, Germany in 1937.
I think set design is a very important thing to a movie like this. It actually really helps to heighten the moment, to heighten to keep you in it. It's like it's very important, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. There's so much this movie does. So I'm just thinking about this. I might watch it again this week, actually.
That was good, man.
All right, well, let's move into score it. And I want to go last, if you guys don't mind.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Unless you really want to, Chris. Now I got it. So I think this movie's an 8. This is one of the better political dramas that we've seen in a while. It is very intense from start to finish. I will be forewarned, people, if you do watch this movie, there is a lot of subtitles. Mm-hmm. They actually come up fairly quickly, too, so you got to be on your game here.
Honestly.
And it works, yeah, too.
It actually helps
with submersion. It is not a detriment. It definitely works. But just be prepared for that. You know, put your glasses on if you need it. But like, I like this movie a lot. I will absolutely, not immediately, but I will watch this movie again. I will recommend this to people that I know are history people, even though this is a fiction-based, you know, this is a work of fiction. I think it's very good. I think it represents the best kind of drama that you can make, where there's very little action. It's all dialogue-based, and that's impressive to be able to pull that off. So this movie's an 8 to me.
So this movie just does so many things right, and acting is fantastic. There are a couple scenes. There are scenes that have you on the edge of your seat, even though you know what happens, and that's just powerful, and just so much star power in this, and just cleverly written things. Where I don't know, I appreciate this movie start to finish. I think language is very important, and on so many levels, and in this movie, it hits it so well with just how much words can just affect the way that you're thinking about a situation. This movie's an 8.5 for me. It's damn good. There's so much happening. This movie's right up my alley. This is a political drama done at its best. This is an 8.5. It's good.
Nice.
All right. I love the cast. It's a very understated cast, but powerful nonetheless. George McKay is great. Giannis Noonar, they steal the show. I mean, Jeremy Irons is fantastic. Nivlee Sofraie, for as few minutes of screen time as she has, she's great. There were several of the British high command that was with Chamberlain that I have seen so many of the British BBC stuff that I watched with my parents back in the day that I've watched now for years. I love so many of them. It's a great casting. This movie does so much right. And I'm glad it didn't, especially in 2022, I'm glad that this movie didn't shy away from some of the more, you know, some of the characters that have committed some of the heaviest atrocities in that time period. I'm glad this movie
toned down the Nazi.
It did not tone down the Nazi. It's a good way to put it. I'm glad this movie does the important things well. It's such a good political thriller. It achieves what a lot of movies in this same genre fail to achieve, is it's interesting from start to finish with no action. Again, I've said that several times, but unless you really understand that, it's so hard to understate. to not understate is that. That's such a powerful writing tool, and it's, if you can pull it off, it's, I think it's worth mentioning. It's worth a look. I think everyone should watch this. This isn't, you know what the real shame is we just got done talking about The Home Team. This is not going to get watched nearly as much as The Home Team on Netflix.
It's unfortunate.
I'll bet you it's like almost, it's probably 2 or 3 to 1 in favor of The Home Team.
Possible.
Which, I mean, it's unfortunate because this is the better movie by spades.
This is the better movie than a lot of movies.
Yeah. I think this is one of Netflix's better movies. But I'm giving it a 7.5. I wanted this movie to be an 8. I couldn't give it an 8, but damn it, it's good. Damn it, it's good. This is like one of the top 5 Netflix originals to me. Me personally, you know, this and Extraction are up there with any of the Netflix films I've seen. I love them both. I cannot talk in more accolades about them. I love them. They're great. I think anyone listening to this should watch it if you haven't already, if you're curious. It's great. I don't have anything more to say about it, but the cast is great. Everything about it is great.
Good. Solid movie.
Solid movie that did not tone down the Nazi. All right. Gentlemen, well, we have finished episode 263B of 264B of Four to Love of Cinema. Kind of lost my place there. Each new episode posts every Tuesday and Friday at 5 a.m. on the podcast service of your choice of the following 5. iTunes, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. I need to stop saying iTunes and saying Apple Podcasts. Please leave a comment or 2, rate, subscribe, every little bit of help. More importantly, thank you very much for listening. Check out the show on Twitter at LoveCinemaPod. I am at GraysonMaxwell1.
I am at RodChillian. I don't have a Twitter.
Thank you, Chris. Check us out on Facebook, always posting things there. Check us out on YouTube. We're going to be having a bigger presence there soon. Send us an email to fortheloveofcinemapodcast@gmail.com. And next week, it's a big week if you like silly and world-ending movies, as we have Jackass Forever and Moonfall.
Jackass on the Moon, baby. Finally.